Welcome to the Teaching Journeys podcast, hosted by Dave Roberts. Humanity possesses a unique skill, the ability to pass knowledge from one generation to the next. This podcast embraces that ability, offering learning opportunities through conversations with extraordinary guests. Dave aims to leave a positive mark on individuals around the world. So before you dive into today's episode, please share this podcast with your network, including friends, family, and colleagues. And please consider leaving a rating or review. Your support makes all the difference.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Teaching Journeys podcast. I'm your host, Dave Roberts, and today it is my pleasure to have as my guest, Victoria Volk. Victoria, the owner of the Unleashed Heart LLC, is an advanced certified grief recovery specialist, self-published author, Reiki master, certified UMAP coach, certified biofield tuning practitioner, and end-of-life doula. Through in-person and online evidence-based grief programs, life path coaching, her podcast, Grieving Voices, and in-person or distance healing sessions, Victoria offers holistic support to those who want to go from surviving to thriving. Victoria, welcome to the Teaching Journeys podcast. It is my absolute pleasure to have you as a guest today.
Thank you for having me.
And I need to share that I was a guest on your Grieving Voices podcast, which, by the way, is listed in the top 5% globally on Listen Notes, which is one of the more comprehensive podcast platforms that we have around. So congratulations for that. That's quite an accomplishment to be listed in the top 5% of over 3 million podcasts that are active right
Thank
now.
Thank you. Yeah, it's been a work in progress.
Well, I can speak from experience in terms of listening to prior episodes. You do a great job with your podcast. You ask insightful questions and you have some really inspirational guests. So I think that combination, I think to me, is a formula for being in the top 5% globally of podcasts that are active. So
yeah, and thank you for being a part of it.
Well, you're welcome, and thank you for letting me be a part of it. It was a great privilege to be on your podcast, and I had a blast talking with you. So, Victoria, my first question for you is: please tell our listeners about the pivotal experiences that have shaped your life path and your life passions.
Well, when I was 7. My grandmother had passed away, and that was my mom's mom, and she had died of melanoma, and she had lived with us for a short period of time. And a year later, my father had also been diagnosed with stage 4 colon cancer. And so as you can imagine, you know, and my father was getting treatment through the VA system, which was 3 hours, 3.5 hours from our home at the time. And so between my mother going between her mom and her husband, right? And then her mother passing away. And then a year later, my father had passed away. Much of my childhood, I suppose, was, you know, I was kind of shuffled around in the care of others because my mom was obviously preoccupied. And then thereafter, preoccupied with her sorrow, right? Like, she had lost her mom, she had lost her husband. I was the youngest of 4 siblings, and there was quite an age gap there's 5 years between my brother and I. And so he would have been around 14, you know, a teenager doing his own things, had a job. And my sister and I were 9 years apart. So she was actually getting ready. So shortly after our father had passed, she enlisted in the Air Force and she moved and she left. And she was like a second mom to me. So I had lost my grandmother, I had lost my father, and I had lost my sister, who was a pivotal part of my life at the time. And then I was molested thereafter as well. And so my childhood wasn't much of a childhood and was full of grief and chaos. And my mother had remarried. I had a family member who had struggled with mental illness. There was so much going on around me and in my environment that there just really wasn't room for me in my big feelings, you know, as children have. So that obviously greatly shaped my life. And in grief recovery, we say that adulthood is childhood reenactments. And so what I learned in childhood was if I wanted to cry, I needed to go hide to cry, because that was what I was kind of told. If you want to cry, go to your room. Like, there was just no room for my sadness. And I did. I went under my bed to fall asleep, to cry, and I'd fall asleep. I went in the one time they sent out a search party. I was in the linen closet. I had fallen asleep crying in the linen closet, and they didn't know where I was. Kitchen cupboard, same thing. Like, I would hide to cry. And that really shaped how I dealt with grief into my adulthood. Now, in my teen years, in between there, I don't know why, but I really tried to be on the straight and narrow. I didn't want to, and I think really subconsciously it was, I didn't want to cause more problems for my mom. I didn't want to be the problem child. So I got good grades. I wasn't like a huge partier. I had friends who did that, but even though I was friends with them, I didn't, you know, it wasn't like, I didn't adopt that as part of my lifestyle, which I easily could have. But I made up for it in my early 20s. And that's when I had a relationship, a long-term relationship that I ended after 5 years. And that kind of set me off on this downward spiral. I knew every drink special there was in town. I almost lost my license. I should have probably lost my license. I was on the brink of losing my license. Having it suspended. I was getting into fender benders and plenty of speeding tickets. That's why I was going to lose my license. And I should have probably lost my job. Like, I had, you know, been talked to about being tardy and late and all of those things because I had been, you know, hungover. Yeah. So those things definitely shaped my life. And because grief is cumulative and it's cumulatively negative, it's just something that like stacks up, and then we have another loss, and it brings up everything before it. And so it was like this, all this buried stuff, you know. And then I ended up getting married to a friend. We had been friends for 7 years and ended up starting a life together and had 3 kids. And by the time my youngest was starting kindergarten, and I was at the same time, I was closing a business. That's when, that would have been around 2014. That's when my personal development journey really started, because I had so much of my identity wrapped up in this business that I had created. I had a photography business. I had a home studio. We had converted our garage into a studio. I was doing weddings and high school seniors and families. And I loved the creative outlet that it gave me, but I felt like there was this urge to do more, like I was meant for more. And it took me a good year to decide to come to the conclusion that in order to embark on something new, I had to close this chapter. In order to make room for something else, I had to make that room, right? So that was really difficult, because by that time I'd invested 10 years of blood, sweat, and tears and money and all those things. And my youngest going to kindergarten, I was like, I need a dog. Let's just replace all these losses and get a dog, because that's what we do, right? We need a distraction. And so that's what I was looking for, a distraction from my really difficult feelings I was having. And it's kind of like my midlife crisis that I was experiencing. And that's really what set off this journey of spiritual growth and personal development and really trying to figure myself out, because I really thought something was wrong with me. Like, I thought it was me, and I just didn't know myself.
Your story really epitomizes that early experience matters. What happens to us in early childhood can affect us moving forward. When you get the message that your feelings aren't to be expressed, and that if you cry, cry in private, that's a message that men internalize, you know, significantly. But when you get that message that it's be seen but not heard, the message you get is that your feelings are invalidated. And when you take a look at, one, the the significant losses you experienced. For me, if a person does not have an opportunity to express their grief in a way that's going to be supported, that's going to be validated, it becomes disenfranchised. I mean, if I were in that situation, I would have probably begun to question whether or not my grief was even valid because it wasn't allowed to be expressed. But the other thing, when you throw, you know, sexual molestation on top of that, I mean, what any vestiges of any childhood you wanted to experience probably went out. You probably never had an opportunity to experience a childhood as we know it. And that carries, if the narrative isn't intervened with early on and the rules that we grew up with are changed or are modified or we aren't given a different alternative, that's going to carry on into other issues or other challenges moving forward. And I'm glad that you recognize that at the time that you were thinking of closing the book on your photography business, and when your youngest child went to kindergarten and said, it's time for me now to make a transition. It's time for me to flip the script and be the co-creator of my own reality in conjunction with the universe. And that's a big part of spiritual growth when we recognize that.
Yeah. And you know, I didn't have God in my life for most of my life. And so to come back to that really served me in my marriage, because being with my husband actually helped me spiritually grow, because he was more spiritual than I was, right? Like I blamed God for many years for everything that happened to me. I even have a chapter in my book called The Victim Mindset. We can so easily get caught up in what everyone else is doing to us and what God has allowed and all of these things, that it's just projected anger, really, and sadness. And what helped me the most was looking in the mirror and being like, well, what can this isn't working for me. What do I need to change? And being the emotional caretaker for not only my mother, but also friends. And, you know, I was the shoulder everybody came to. And all of that too led to people pleasing and making sure that everybody's emotions around me were managed and taken care of. Because then when everyone else was feeling good, then I could feel good, right? Like that's the environment I grew up in. And so I've always been like the emotional caretaker of the people in my environment. And now I can confidently say that is me no more. Like energy healing work has definitely served me in that way, to better understand my own energy and understand the impact of my energy and other people's energy on me. And that emotionally, like doing the grief recovery work myself and working through my anger and resentment. And, you know, I lost sense of safety and security. I lost a lot in my childhood. So to regain all of that was a lot of work. It's not easy. And when people say, well, you got to do the work. Well, what's the work? I had a client that I worked with I took her through the process through my program, Do Grief Differently. And she said it perfectly. She's like, people say you got to do the work. Well, what's the work? She's like, now I know this is the work.
And, you know, a lot of times what beginning therapists mistakenly assume is that because a person wants to do the work, they know what the work is. And if they've come from an unhealthy family situation where healthy coping skills weren't modeled, where chaos was the rule rather than the exception, they don't have rational or life-affirming coping skills to deal with the challenges that come forth. So if they say they want to do the work, but they don't know how to do the work, or they can't define the work, then it's up to us to say, okay, what tools do you need from me to help you do the work? Because once we can provide the foundation, then the insight follows due to the application of the tools that we've collaboratively provided for them.
Well, and you can read all the self-help books out there. You can do all the programs, but if you don't integrate it and implement it, it's just knowledge is not power. Knowledge is not power. Implemented knowledge is power. Knowledge put into action is power.
Can you speak a little bit more about how the energy healing work has been transformative for you and how you see that being transformative with the clients that you work with?
I mean, a lot of energy healers will say that Reiki found them or energy work found them. And I think that's very true for most healers. I think most healers will say that, and our energy workers will say that. And it is true for me as well. Like, I kept hearing, but it took me to go through my grief stuff, right? To open up my mind and be open to receiving, because whatever messages, right, would come to me. Because when we are, think of how much energy it takes to be angry, how much physical bandwidth that takes within our body. When we feel angry, we have a visceral response in our body. We clench up, we tighten, our vessels constrict. Like, there's so much that happens physically. And it's no different with other emotions. Like, when we feel joy, and, you know, it's the opposite, right? Like, we want to scream from the rooftops and share our joy with everybody. And so emotions play a huge role in understanding where we are at energetically. And if we can clean our energetic doorstep, and part of that is doing the work, the grief work, addressing the past, because people say all the time, I hear it, I don't have to look at the past. It's in the past. It is what it is. It is what it is. Like, you hear that all the time, right? And it's not going to change anything. I can't change the past. Misinformation really is what it is, because what's happening is, I would ask that person, well, how is it working for you not looking at your past? Because the patterns of behavior that you displayed and were taught in childhood, you're probably doing the same things today, or maybe even worse, right? Like, if you had a lot of boyfriends or girlfriends in your youth, like, that probably hasn't changed. If you feel like you can never be alone, like, if you are so uncomfortable with your own company, that says something. You know, if you always are looking for validation and affirmation from outside of yourself, there's probably some self-love issues that you're not addressing. So working through that stuff, and for me personally, that's what cleared the way, the energetic way to receive. What's this Reiki? Like, I kept hearing about Reiki. Okay, well, let me look into that. You know, it's like my receptors were clean and I could receive this incoming message. And so that's what took me down that path of energy work. And as soon as I could, I went through my Reiki master and my Karuna Holy Fire Reiki master as well. And then that led to, you know, then it's like rabbit holes. It's once you start doing the work, life just seems like one rabbit hole after another, because I started to follow my curiosity. I started to listen to my intuition, and that led to biofield tuning, which uses tuning forks. And that's been phenomenal for myself, but also for my clients who started out as Reiki clients who happen to really love, it's more bang for your buck, so to speak, I feel, because our energy extends 5 to 6 feet out from our body. I equate it to, like, when you come into a room full of people and you kind of pass somebody and you get this sensation, like, it's like you feel yourself kind of constrict. Listen to that, right? Like, your energy is kind of bumping up against theirs, and it's giving your body signals. So the biofield, your energy field, informs the body, and the body informs the biofield. So any trauma that you haven't dealt with, emotional stuff that you're holding on to with dear life, it's impacting your energy field. It's manifesting either as physical symptoms or ailments or emotional things. And it's really helped me sit with people in their deepest grief, because people will say to me all the time, it's like, well, when I tell them what I do, and they're like, that sounds depressing, you know, and listen to people's stories through my podcast, like, grief is the center of what I do. And for a lot of people, yeah, it's they're not equipped for it. But why aren't they equipped for it? I think we all have a capacity to sit with others in their grief. It's just to the level at which we are capable of doing that is directly related to the depths of which we've sat with our own.
And unless we sat with our own grief and we are aware of our own attitudes about death and about dying, and unless we're in touch with that, it's going to be very difficult to hold space for somebody else. But I agree with you too, that once we clear the work of grief, and our energy becomes more balanced, becomes more unleashed or released, you know, it opens ourselves up to multidimensional universal possibilities. We can be more receptive to signs from our loved ones. We can be more receptive to following our own intuition. But until we do that work of grief, it's really difficult to open ourselves up to other possibility. Once we're in the muck of grief, once we get through it, and then we begin to embrace different perspectives through the help of support groups, with the help of grief support specialists like yourself, that we can open ourselves up to other possibilities. And for me, my perspective had to shift, or else I could not be sitting here having a conversation of this nature. If my perspective hadn't shifted following the transition of my own daughter over 21 years ago, I value the work that you do with energy work. I've been a recipient of Reiki. I've had tuning forks applied to me. I've had acupuncture applied, massage therapy. I've had body scans done. I've had soul journeys done. And I can tell you the information that I've received from that has been extremely valuable. I can see science. I can see holistic practices, spiritual practices now coming together in a very synergistic format to increase my awareness about myself, about my behavior, about the behaviors of others. I think everybody should avail themselves of an integrative approach, or at least expose themselves to things that are at odds with their own core belief system. That's how we develop critical thinking. That's how we develop a more expanded sense of the universe. And to get to your idea about the past, past isn't something to be stared at, but the past is something that we can learn from. And I tell my students that everything you've done in the present has been predicated on past decisions. If you sat and you looked at how you got to the present moment, take a look at your past decisions and see how that orchestrated that. When we experience catastrophic loss of any kind or tragedy of any kind, it demands that we look at our past experiences, our past beliefs, our past attitudes, and see what changes, what stays, what gets eliminated. Every loss, every challenge that we have demands that we take a look at our belief system and reevaluate.
I fully agree. Yeah, absolutely.
Now, I know you are a certified grief recovery specialist. Why? I know there's a lot of programs to certify, grief specialists. Why this particular program? What was it that resonated with you about the program more than others? And what impact have you found the grief recovery method to have on the clients that you serve?
Well, it's actually the only grief program I found at first going to Google. And it was the first one I found, and it was the first one I looked into and researched. And I knew right away, this is for me. And I think subconsciously it was like, okay, this is what I need to help people. I went into it knowing, yeah, I could use some of this myself. But I really want to be a helper and a healer, right? And so I went into it with that attitude. But, I got more than I bargained for, and in the best way. I had read the book before, because actually I had registered to go through the program myself, and it was canceled. And I happened to have the dates off from work already, and there is another location that had the same dates, but it was in Texas. So I invested way more than I would have had to have. Like, I could have right then and been like, no, I just, okay, I guess that's a sign not to do it. Give me a refund. I guess it wasn't meant to be. But I was like, I was so certain that this would be the game changer for me to help others, but also for myself. And so I did. I invested way more. I flew to Texas and went through the certification. And the person that went there was not the same person that came home. And it was like the floodgates had opened. I didn't know how much I could cry. Like, it, 30 plus years of tears, just like the dam broke. And literally, physically, it was a purge. That first day, I was sick. I woke up, I had diarrhea, I was vomiting. But because I had read the book, and my teacher, who was so gracious, she went out and got me some Dramamine. I laid on the floor as she gave the instruction. The class itself was not typically what it would typically be. It was because there were some people that were actually there who were already specialists, who were there for an advanced training themselves. So it was and then there was a couple that were there paid for by their school district. So I really felt supported. It was just a really odd situation, which has never happened, I was told, and hasn't since. So I joke with people that I'm the queen of attracting odd duck situations into my life. And this very much was, but it was such a life changer. And why it's different is because although every single person goes through the same method, it is unique to you because your grief is unique to you. And it's laid out in such a way that it's educational, it's informative. You naturally connect dots for yourself. And with the guidance of a facilitator, even more so, because you can't see the label from inside the jar, which is why, you know, when I first read the book, when my first training was canceled, I thought, I can do this myself. My husband even said, you taught yourself so many things. You can go through it yourself. You can do this. You don't need to go to Texas. And so I read the book, but if I grabbed it, you'd see all my sticky notes and tabs sticking out. And it was like, you can't do this yourself. I tried. And so I was very thankful and grateful that I decided to invest in myself and do that with the support of others at that training and certification. And again, it's different because it's an action-based method that is evidence-based. Kent University did a study and it is evidence-based. It's not based on evidence, which is different. It's evidence-based. Mm-hmm. And it's been working for hundreds of thousands of people, and it is worldwide, and it's been around for more than 40 years. But the founder, John James, who was a veteran, had lost a child and his marriage was falling apart, and he went to the beach and he was going to complete suicide. And the one thought that came to his mind was, what do I wish would have been there for me? Was this question that just landed in his mind. And that stopped him, because it was like, I don't want anyone else to have to go through this. And so he was working as a contractor at the time, and just started talking with people, started having conversations with men and, you know, people of all walks of life. And eventually the Grief Recovery Institute was born, and this method was adopted and developed and refined over time. And yeah, it's the greatest thing ever. And the thing about it too is, once you learn it, you have it for life. Like, no one can take these tools from you, and you can apply it to all kinds of relationships, which I have. My relationship with alcohol, my relationship with money, because those things are relationships. There's energetic exchange, right? Everything is energy. We are made up of energy, and everything is energy. And so it's, you know, looking at things as if it is a relationship. Food, your inner child, body image, right? Like, these are all relationships that we have either internally or with others. So it's yeah, very multifaceted and very adaptable to many scenarios.
And I think in your description of the grief recovery method, I like the fact that it can be individualized to client need based on their own specific grieving style, what their prior beliefs are, what their current interests are, what their past interests have been. You could tailor a program that's very individualized and very collaborative, so it doesn't look the same for every individual. And if you put all of them in a support group, they're going to share those different experiences. And if one of the norms is that we witness each other's experiences as opposed to judging it, that's going to create an environment where there's going to be belief expansion, there's going to be tolerance, there's going to be support. And that in and of itself is very powerful. And we can't underestimate the importance of quality support to help individuals get through challenges anyway. So,
yeah, and I loved doing groups, particularly like in person. When I first got certified, I started doing in-person groups right away. And it was, you see these people really form friendships by the end of it. And it's through sharing and storytelling and someone sitting with you and the same person sitting with you. It's really structured too in a way that creates safety. Safety is a huge piece of the program itself. And so it's not like every other support group where people can drop in and out whenever, and there's often no action taking moving forward, but this is very different too in that way.
And I think safety and structure is key for any individuals that had a history of depression, anxiety, mm-hmm. for individuals like yourself who had multiple losses and, a loss of childhood. And I think that type of support and nurturing is extremely, extremely important. You can't underestimate that. And I also found it very, very interesting as I was listening to your experience when you were going through the certification for the grief recovery method, that I was thinking to myself, if I put myself in your situation, I would be thinking that, boy, I was getting the support that I longed for in early childhood when I experienced all of these losses and there was no validation of my feelings or acknowledgement of myself as an individual within that structure. And it was almost like the universe opened up and said, okay, we're going to give you an opportunity to fix karma.
And how bad do you want it?
And how bad do you want it? And I tell individuals, just because the universe opens up a path, we have the free will not to take it. But we can't complain when we think the universe is denying us any opportunity to grow, because if they provided opportunities and we used our free will not to take it, then we have nobody to be accountable for except ourselves.
And that's where in the method too, we talk about taking at least 1% responsibility.
Yep.
Even in a situation of sexual abuse, yep. which I was able to do. And it's not easy. And forgiveness.
No, it isn't.
Forgiveness is a huge piece of the work too.
Yeah, that is sometimes a work in progress, because I think initially when you may mention forgiveness with somebody like yourself who's been sexually abused or who has had parental abandonment or any other trauma in childhood, that is not easily forgivable. It's like they may look at you like you have two heads. What, forgiveness? I can't do that. Well, maybe you can't do it now, but like with anything, grief recovery is a process. You may not be ready to do it at this point of your transition from pain into purpose, but you may be ready to do it at another time.
Of course. And the thing that people misunderstand, I think, about forgiveness is that it's not for the other person. It is for you. Because as long as you are holding on to resentment and anger and all of that, you are keeping yourself in emotional jail. That person you're giving your power away.
Exactly. I want to flip to the podcast for a minute, the Grieving Voices podcast. What is the mission of the Grieving Voices podcast? And how does it align with your individual work in providing grief recovery support to the individuals that you serve?
My tagline is, let's talk about grief like we talk about the weather. And it's not in a recite a recipe type of way, right? It's let's story tell, let's share stories like we talk about the weather. Instead of mm-hmm. when you're walking by somebody on the street and you say, hey, how you doing? You say, I'm fine. Well, we say in grief recovery, fine is feelings inside not expressed. How are you really feeling? It gets emotionally honest about where we're at and be comfortable and okay with that. Because I think so often, it's like when someone asks, like when I'm having a really difficult time or going through something and someone would ask, hey, how's it going? Do you really want to know? How much time do you have? Right? Like we don't go there because do they really care? Is it just small talk? You know, all of those things like rapid fire in our minds. Well, it's just easier just to say, great, good, fine. You know, it's the way of the world. It's so it's really about creating time and space to really share our stories in a deep level, in a deep way, and emotionally connect. I've had people who had contemplated suicide, who were very close to being, who had suicidal ideation, tell me, and through my own trainings and things that I have, mental health first aid training and all of these things, like connection is the stop way, the way that we stop this, prevent suicide, right? It's the anecdote, the antidote to suicide is connection. And I have a friend that says, you know, it's really hard to be mad at somebody when you know their story. And I think that's 100% true.
Yeah, because, you know, we never know what another person is dealing with. So acts of kindness and compassion, even to somebody we don't know, can make a difference in the life of somebody who's considering ending their life because they see that they feel that they have no value to anybody. But, you know, one of the things this is another thing I tell my students, if somebody comes to you and they're telling you that they're thinking of completing suicide, they want you to talk them out of it. They want you to, they're looking for a reason to go on for at least another day to delay their decision. So provide a safe space and let them know that, you know, that their life does matter. Ask them, you know, who would be upset if you took your life right now? One of my students who had been contemplating suicide said this to me. She said, I don't think anybody would care or would be sad if I killed myself. And I looked at her, I said, there's one person who would be sad. And she goes, yeah, who's that? I said, me. Because once you came into my life, you became a part of my extended family. And I always look at my students as a part of my extended family. So if you killed yourself, understand that there's going to be at least one person who's going to be extremely sad, and that's going to be me. And today she's engaged. I think she may even be married. She's pregnant with her first child. She's working. I haven't heard from her a lot since that conversation, but it doesn't matter because, you know, I still remember that moment. And I just felt grateful that she trusted me enough to tell me that, hey, I'm thinking of checking out because I don't think anybody cares. And that's the ultimate level of trust when somebody can share something that intimate, knowing that they could possibly be judged because of the stigma that's associated with suicide. But she trusted that I was going to listen to it, that I was going to hear it, and I was going to just say, I was going to try to be as supportive and try to very gently get her to reconsider her decision or delay her decision.
Yeah, I think it was a very pivotal response that you provided. I mean, because you could have responded 1,000 different ways, but perhaps it was how you responded that changed her perspective of that.
Yeah. And I think because of my own circumstances with having a daughter transition, I have committed myself to really trying to put forth my best foot, not in terms of just as an instructor for my students, but also as somebody who's supportive to them outside of class. And that's one of the the things that I learned as a result of my challenges with my daughter's transition was, I think my compassion went to a whole new different level. It extended outside of the people that I knew, and extended to people I didn't know.
Well, and even from my perspective as a child grieving, like nobody in no adults knew what to say or do. So they did nothing and said nothing.
Yeah.
You know?
And I think today that's still the case, although there has been more emphasis on teaching individuals how to support grieving individuals, what to say, what not to say, how to hold space, how to be present. But as a society, we still struggle in many ways with supporting grieving individuals.
And that's why I started my podcast. That's really at the whole, like the goal and the mission is to talk about grief like we talk about the weather, but how do we do that? And so it's bringing people from all walks of life to share their stories. And I sometimes, you know, I have to poke the bear a little bit because people aren't, you know, ready to go there, or they're, I can see like they want to share something, but it's, you know, I can feel that there's more there. So sometimes I poke the bear and I, you know, I ask, I'm here to ask the questions. Like what I've learned about myself is I am the questioner. I am a questioner. Why? I was the why kid, driving everybody crazy. And it's like, so I bring that to my podcast and my, when I'm talking with people, it's, I follow my curiosity. I follow my own intuition. And that's what drives the questions I often ask. And it's me wanting to help them and show that you can go deeper. And this is a safe space to do that. And you're going to help somebody in doing so, because someone listening needs to hear what you are not wanting to say. It's what you're not wanting to say. It's probably what someone really needs to hear. And so it's for a greater purpose. And sometimes I, you know, maybe take that too far, but at some point it's most of the time I'm, you know, the feedback I've only had one time where I've gotten great feedback on my questioning. And but it's in hindsight, that person just was not, they're very disconnected from their own story. I didn't feel an emotional connection. And if I'm not feeling an emotional connection with my guest, my listeners won't either. And I want the podcast to be of service. And I want it to be collaborative. And that's how we do that, is we share and exchange stories. In meaningful ways, not recite a recipe type of way. It's, you know, it's give the feeling behind what you experienced. And I think that's what's missing, because with AI, with, you know, and I think that's where podcasts are really going to take off as well, because as long as it's not AI speaking, right? Like, is that, I can see that happening, right? But it's, when it comes down to it, I think with so much technology, how it's moving, it comes down to the importance of storytelling.
Yep.
AI can't replace connection.
Nope.
Human to human connection.
Nope. And I know there's some AI-based apps that provide mental health services, but it's not the same as having a human connection. You are the only certified grief recovery method specialist in the world that's also a certified UMAP coach. Tell us what UMAP is and tell us how it complements the work that you do with the grief recovery method.
So UMAP is comprised of four different assessments, one of which is the Clifton Strengths. And then there's another assessment that you find your values, your top 10 values, your preferred and least preferred skills, and then how you're wired, kind of your personality. And those four assessments together create what's called a UMAP. And what I have found when I, early on in the grief work, it was like, okay, even for myself, like, okay, I've done all this personal work, this deep stuff. Now what? I kind of had this question, like, now what? And I would find that even the grievers I was working with, like, okay, well, now what? You know, and so what UMAP did for me and where I connected the dots was I actually can tell a lot about a person just from their UMAP without them saying a word. I can connect dots that with their grief story to their UMAP, uncovering, helping them uncover probably more grief that they didn't even recognize or long forgotten, right? The thing about our values is that they are either honored or dishonored, either by ourselves, we can dishonor our own values, right? Or other people can dishonor our values or honor them. And they're also reciprocal or they're not reciprocal. So for instance, I value honesty. So honesty is almost always a reciprocal value. I expect honesty from other people. That's a reciprocal value of mine. I also value growth. So that's not reciprocal. I don't expect everybody around me to value growth, but because it's a value of mine, I can honor it by surrounding myself with other people who value growth and investing in my own growth. If I'm not doing that, I'm dishonoring my own value of growth. So we can find how grief plays a role or where we may have grief just by looking at a UMAP, at someone's UMAP. Like, where are you dishonoring your values? Where are other people dishonoring your values? It can show you where you need boundaries or where you don't have boundaries or where other people have boundaries that you're not comfortable with, because we're all unique, right? 1 in 33 million people will have the same value or the same UMAP as you. 1 in 33 million, or the same top five strengths, basically, as you. My number one strength is empathy. And I also have 3 thinking strengths. So I'm often in my head. It's a lot of internal processing that goes through. And then I have connectedness and strategic and connectedness, strategic. I should have this off the top of my head, but I don't. Anyway, it's input. So I'm constantly wanting to learn, right? And anyway, you just kind of learn where grief has shown up in other ways based on your UMAP. But also then, okay, now that you've done all this work, what next? What comes next? Because oftentimes when people have lost a significant other who maybe was the breadwinner, now they're having to go into the workforce for the first time, or maybe they're having to transition careers to support themselves, or maybe their children. A life, midlife crisis where they're just ready to pivot, where maybe they've come to the awareness that they're completely burned out in what they were doing because it wasn't aligned. You can see that very clearly and after you go through a UMAP process. And so, incorporating it into the work that I do in my program, Do Grief Differently, was very much a no-brainer. I start with UMAP, the strengths, and we circle back to it at the end. But it's really, I learned so much about someone just by their UMAP without even having a conversation with them.
Well, the other thing I like about the UMAP approach is that it does focus on strengths. It focuses on what we do well. And when we experience any kind of tragedy, that can be disempowering, because we're trying to figure out what's our place in the world. How are we going to get through this? What tools are we going to be able to acquire? And so once you do a UMAP with somebody, it identifies their core strengths that they can implement to deal with the challenges that's before them. So I think it's a great compliment. It kind of reminds me of a positive psychology approach, which really focuses on a strengths perspective to help individuals, re-engage in life with purpose and passion. So I think that's a great combination.
It's like the lighthouse of your life. If you have any opportunity or job offer or relationship or whatever it is, you can put it, hold it up against your UMAP and say, is this aligned? Does this align with me? And there's also what's called purpose map. So there's another, and that's a more spiritual, faith-based option as well. So that's very interesting too.
Well, I think when we're working with clients in any capacity, we can't do holistic treatment without holistic treatment or support without finding out what their spiritual preferences are. and what their beliefs are about spirituality. And if they don't want to go there, that's their choice. But we still have to broach the question.
Well, and I think any tool that helps people get a better understanding of themselves. Now, remember, mm-hmm. that's really what my initial pull into personal development was in the beginning. It wasn't, well, let me see all the ways I can work through my grief. It was, how can I figure myself out so I can understand myself so I don't continue to repeat the same patterns of behavior, so these same things don't keep cropping up in my life and taking me down? And why am I just destined for this life of suffering? Like, I was ready to take my life in my own hands. And so a huge part of that is being open to tools that help you and enable you to better understand yourself. Another tool I'm heavily interested in now is human design. So that's another element that I'm starting to like incorporate and trying to figure out, finding the commonalities and connecting dots of how my human design has related to grief in my life, which I coincidentally have recently connected those dots in the past year. And that's been huge. It's been freeing, actually. I'm a manifester human design, and it's one of the rarer of the types. And, you know, it's a huge part of being a manifester is the feeling of rejection. And I've experienced a lot of that in my life, and a lot of people do, but it hits differently for a manifester. it was what I'm saying. So just any tool that can really help you get a better understanding of your energy and who you are and what makes you tick and why you do the things you do. But again, it's asking yourself, the deeper the questions you ask, the deeper the answers you will find.
Mm-hmm. And sometimes the deep questions require us to go to places that we may not want to go to, but the best spiritual work that we do is looking at the messy parts of our human design and the messy parts of our experience. And that's what's going to really promote profound spiritual growth, more so perhaps than just the good moments that we've experienced. So it's always looking at the yin and the yang of who we are that's going to promote growth. Victoria, if you're going to leave our audience with one thing today, what would that be?
Probably the one thing that I was holding on to for dear life is that there was hope that my life could be different, because and how I felt inside and my perspective could be different, because I alluded to or mentioned, like, I thought my life was destined to be one of suffering. Coincidentally, I do have the 36, or I think it's the 63-64 channel in human design, which is the channel of struggle, basically. It's, perhaps I was put into this body because to have the experiences I did, to be sitting here having this conversation with you right now. And by some will of God and my own will to make the change, right? To do the hard stuff. I mean, the hardest thing has already happened in your life. Mm-hmm. Probably one of the hardest things has already happened. So do you continue to allow that to be the story you ruminate in? Continue to be the hardest thing day after day? Or do you flip the script of your own life? Mm-hmm. And there is hope. There's tools, there's education, there's information, there are people, there are resources. There's a way. There is a way.
I agree. And it's our choice, I believe, in terms of how we proceed. Once we've allowed the tragedy to envelop us and we've sat with that, it's up to us in terms of how we proceed. And we can choose to move forward. We can choose to stay where we're at. And it's all about free will to do what it is we feel we need to do. Even if we may not agree with that other person's choice, it's still their decision. Yeah. For those individuals who want to get in touch with you, find out more about your services, purchase your book, which I know we didn't get a chance to discuss today, but what's the best way for them to do that, Victoria?
All the links for all the things are on my website, theunleashedheart.com, and my podcast link is on there. I've got free ebooks and resources. I've created some meditations, one specifically for grief, and there's one for pet loss. I actually have a pet loss self-paced online program as well. I do energy healing work, so those links are on there. I'm going to be launching an energy healing membership, which I'm really excited about because it'll just enable me to serve more people and just incorporate some creative play, which is really at the heart of, you know, as a kid, I'd be the kid that was ordering palm reading books and kind of the woo-woo type stuff. And all the other kids were, I don't know what they were ordering, but it wasn't what I was ordering. So bringing more of my creative, playful self into the work is, I'm really excited about that. So all the resources and everything are on my website.
Well, the resources that you provide are so diverse, which I think reflects your philosophy on the individualistic approaches that we need to take for individuals who are grieving. So I think it's great that you have that diverse number and types of resources on your website. So I will make sure all of your contact information goes in the episode notes so that my listeners can access that. Victoria, thank you so much for a great conversation today. I really enjoyed spending time with you today. I hope we can do it again sometime.
My pleasure, and thank you so much for having me, Dave.
You're welcome. And with that, that is a wrap on another episode of the Teaching Journeys podcast. I'm your host, Dave Roberts, wishing you peace.